אז איך שנסתכל על זה ונסתכל כן פעמיים, היום זורם זורם כמו אתמול, כמו שלשום.
This is Dr. Ali Evans welcoming you all to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect all of our health and that of our entire community. My guest today is Sarah Snedeker, who is a mindfulness and creativity coach. And I get the pleasure of working with you side by side in the pottery studio.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Ali.
Yeah. So I've gotten these little snippets just in us sitting and creating and sitting next to each other about kind of your life work.
Yeah.
But share a little bit of what you do and then we'll kind of go from there. And I'm really curious to hear how you ended up where you know, in the career you're in and kind of this path.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I probably should start how I ended up in this career path.
Yeah.
So I was originally in school for a teaching program to become a school teacher. So becoming a mindfulness and creativity coach is definitely on the other end of that spectrum for sure. I experienced my own life transformational experience with the loss of my husband, which created, at the time it was devastating, but it really created actually an opportunity because I could no longer be a single mother in a full-time school program. And so I started working as a full-time artist, which was something I was doing previously. Mm. Spending years as a public artist, then I started coaching people privately. And then I started getting training and working with people one-on-one. And most recently, that's what I've been doing the last 4 or 5 years, in addition to following the path of Hakomi and internal family systems as a way to weave into the work that I'm doing.
Mm. When that happened and you lost your husband and you were kind of on this path, was there a part of you that was kind of, oh my gosh, my whole plan is through the window? Like,
totally.
Was there a part that just totally resisted that?
Definitely.
And,
yeah. I mean, I had committed to the program and I was in the school program. And just, you know, when you're in survival mode and that inner resiliency sort of comes online, I was just like, I can do this. I've got to do this. This is the plan. There's kind of no other way. And the art thing was cute, but that's not really going to pay the bills,
yeah.
You know? So I sort of was just trying to really buckle down. And it was actually my daughter's nanny had reflected to me. She's like, you know, I know that this was the plan. And I'm telling you this and it doesn't benefit me, but your daughter really needs you. You know, she was 3 years old and just hearing that changed my perspective.
Mm.
And I was like, well, that's my priority right there. And so that caused me to get off the horse of this is the plan and this is how it's going to be. And instead start from a place of mystery. And I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting what you say that. Like when you're in that survival, fight or flight, trauma, whatever it is, you often hear people's advice about, you know, don't make any big life changes during this phase. But I think oftentimes those are the phases that the huge life changes are born from.
Yeah. And I actually trust those.
Mm.
So, you know, I think where that advice can be valuable for some people if they're feeling like they're not quite, you know, thinking straight or they're, you know, very, you know, dysregulated in their decision making. But for me, I feel like, and anybody who's had experiences like that, there kind of comes this inner voice. It's a whisper. It almost is like a whisper, like, oh, I know this voice. This is a voice I can trust. It's sort of when you're kind of on the edge of the cliff and you feel like you don't have a lot to lose because you've kind of lost everything.
Yeah.
I just found that that voice guided me towards making decisions that logically didn't really make sense, and they didn't necessarily make sense to those around me. I remember family saying, you know, stay in school, you've got to stay in school. And I'm like, you know, the people pleaser in me would have tried to like live up to those expectations, but I don't have room for that anymore. This voice is so much bigger, and that's
right.
What I'm trusting.
Do you know that Joseph Campbell's idea of follow your bliss?
Yeah.
I've had so many conversations about this. Sometimes you'll hear in spiritual teachings, yes, follow that little voice or follow your bliss, or, you know, however you want to label it. But I often wonder, is it the bliss we're following, or is it just, like you said, this intuitive calling, which may not feel like bliss and maybe like just so scary and so overwhelming?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, is that bliss? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, that idea.
Yeah. I think it's sort of based on what you said, is I sort of think of it as this sort of thread that weaves throughout your life. Intuition is how you described it. And I feel like following that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be all rainbows and butterflies at all. But it's undeniable, and it's a suppression of sort of that inner truth or your intuition that I feel like for myself causes the most suffering and discomfort, mm-hmm. regardless of what's going on externally. Listening to that.
And that idea of just suppression of anything, right? What we see in medicine with physical symptoms is often when you suppress enough, it's going to spill over into some symptoms somewhere.
Yeah.
And the same with chronic anxiety or panic attacks or even depression. It's like, what are we trying to put the lid on that you know, our beings are really trying to release in some way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a lot of my work with people, is creating a safe space where they can kind of spill over. And I have an intimate understanding that healing is not tidy.
Yes.
It's messy.
So messy.
And so it's okay. I like to think of myself as a permissionary. Like, it's okay to show up as you are and encourage that. And it's kind of the same way with creativity. It's messy. It's not always tidy. It's exploratory and experiential. So a lot of my work tends to be experiential and exploratory with folks when life gets messy.
Yeah, as it always is going to, right?
Yeah.
Something that you have referenced that I love this idea of, and I'd love for you to share, is equanimity.
Yeah.
Like how we, you know, I picture it like, how do we right our boat that's going to be on waves and rocky seas time and time again?
Yeah. So taking what you said about equanimity and tying it back to sort of the conversation we'd been having, I think oftentimes for people, when there's a challenge that presents itself in their life and the waves feel really rocky, oftentimes people say, or they report, you know, even though everything in my external world was on shaky ground, somehow there was this little inner flicker of light inside of me that was still and calm and grounded and centered amongst all of that. And so sometimes we can project on people that, oh, their life is, you know, they're having all of these experiences and their life is falling apart. It must be so horrible. And it also is an opportunity to see that there is always a place inside of you, regardless of what's going on. And sometimes it's just in the mundane stresses of life that we lose contact with that spark inside. And so it's kind of a walking back towards ourselves, towards our center, which sometimes is also meaning it's peeling the layer of the onions of the things that stand between us and that peace and that inner equanimity. But all of it is from within, regardless of what's going on.
And how would you define the school teacher part of you? How would you define equanimity to someone?
So I would describe equanimity as a sense of pervasive peace and calm.
That's kind of independent of what's going on in the outer world.
Yeah, a sense of life is okay. Mm-hmm. Like just a general okayness with life. Life is okay.
Yeah.
It's like a muscle. I think of it as a muscle. So we work that muscle and it becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. But I think of it as we build that muscle of capacity within ourselves to be like, oh, you know, 3 months ago, this experience would have totally had me in my bed crying and sobbing. And now I'm having this experience and I have a completely different perspective of like, oh, this is happening. And that sense of equanimity And the skills that I use to help people understand it when we're working together really come from the practices of Hakomi, which is a mindfulness-based psychotherapy process of really getting present in the moment with our bodies and our awareness. And the more we do that, the more we're able to do that when life happens.
Mm-hmm. And something we were talking about before the show, and I hear this daily in my office, just this idea of challenges happen. They're always going to happen. And there's purpose to the challenge. But the belief or that idea that people will sometimes hold of all these challenges are happening, I must be doing something wrong, or, you know, either it's that personal responsibility, I must be doing something wrong, or I must not be on my right path.
Yeah.
Like something has led me astray.
Yeah. Yeah. Challenges. I think really evoke self-doubt and uncertainty in ourselves and can be really destabilizing. But I think when we normalize that loss, challenges, life not going as expected is really going to happen from when we're born until we die.
Right.
It is just one big kind of mystery. And it's how can we be better equipped to be with others and be with ourselves as life happens? And I don't know that that's necessarily a tool or a skill set that we're really taught.
Right.
But it can be taught.
Right. And oftentimes that idea, you know, people are really doing a lot of inner work and really showing up and wanting to evolve and grow and spread the most light they can in the world. And they'll be kind of trying to manifest that. And then this huge challenge comes and they feel derailed. But really, I see it as, yeah, here's the universe giving you that gift that you've been asking for to reach your next level.
Yeah.
But it has to be through effort. You know, childbirth is not, it's not like you want to birth something into being and it's just this simple, like, I'm ready, bring it, universe, and here we go, this gentle, welcoming to the world.
Oh, yeah. Totally. That's a great description, Allie.
Yeah.
And one way I started to reframe it for myself, and sometimes I reframe it for other people, especially when you are describing people who feel like they are somebody who shows up as light or inspiration for others in their lives, is when we have a challenge, one way I sort of am able to step back and depersonalize from it is I work with people who have challenges all the time. How can I be asking other people to be facing their challenges or work with what's presenting themselves in their lives right now if I'm afraid of or I'm shying away from what this means? Mm-hmm. And instead, I sort of take the meaning of why it's happening away instead. It's not just for me. If I can meet this, if I can be with this, if I can love this discomfort, if I can sort of contain and shine some compassion and curiosity, that creates sort of the foundation for breeding the wisdom and tools that you would then be able to share with other people and make it accessible and repeatable. Is really meeting challenges with compassion and curiosity and creativity.
Right. That's the fun art part.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, I am talking to Sarah Snedeker, who's a mindfulness and creativity coach. And we are talking about mindfulness and emotions and art and how this all riddles into it.
Yeah.
So the idea of kind of pairing art with your work, obviously you came by through it through an art background, but talk a little bit about how art helps to kind of tap into that, you know, either that inner voice you were talking about or the calling or the just getting out of our, you know, intellectual head and into our intuitive head. Or
it does everything you just described. I think of art as being kind of a vehicle, an accessible vehicle for anybody to sort of drive straight into our intuitive felt sense. Where mindfulness comes in is when you are in that state and you're accessing that state, flow states, some people call it, that also breeds a sense of timelessness and equanimity and general okayness with life. It allows sort of the unconscious to kind of come to the surface in a safe way when we're preoccupied a little bit with doing something. Mm-hmm. So a lot of healing and insights and aha and inspiration can come through just the act of creation. But I found I sort of stumbled upon it when I had painted as a public artist for years and years with thousands of people from ages 6 to 85. And I never met somebody who was not creative. And I did the experiments, I put my time in, and so there, I know everybody has this innate capacity in them, and it's something that we've just lost touch with. It's been there from the beginning. It's very much tied to developmentally when we were younger, and then we got preoccupied. But everybody has that capacity within them. So if the conditions are right, my belief is if there's safety, the conditions are right, and you're meeting people where they're at, that's a big part of it. Then you scaffold them in deeper and deeper and deeper mm-hmm. into that capacity. When they discover that for themselves, they discovered it for themselves. Mm-hmm. It's theirs. They get to take it with them, and nobody gets to take it away. So it becomes a mindset and a mind state that then they can apply to different areas of their life just by virtue of using something so simple as the act of creation and creativity.
Yeah. And something, you know, oftentimes, like you're talking about, get like access into that flow state or access into that realm. Oftentimes people will use meditation as a tool for it, but I find lots of people will say, I'm not good at it. I can't do it. My brain is going 2,000 places at once. As soon as mm-hmm. I close my eyes, I'm thinking about my checkbook or my taxes I didn't file or whatever.
Yeah.
I love the idea. I don't want to say tricking the body, but it's almost you're doing something that's outside of the mind to access that realm.
Yeah, because you actually can't have both. You can't actually do and be thinking about, you can't be doing it because you're doing it. So it is kind of this funny, you know, like a dog chasing its tail sort of a thing. There's that. And then also the part of meeting people where they're at. Some people are a little bit more identified with the intellectual space inside of themselves. But there's processes we have like using internal family systems mm-hmm. where, okay, well, let's give every voice inside of you an opportunity so that the person learns that the voice that says I'm not good at it or I can't is a voice. There are other voices that are there too, that are maybe a little bit shyer, are standing a little bit further back. But when we create sort of a system within ourselves where we allow us to try on different hats, it becomes more accessible. Mm-hmm. And that's often in working with others. It's the inner intrapersonal relationship mm-hmm. of having another person say, that's okay. You don't have to believe it. Right. I believe
right.
I believe in that capacity for you. And I'm just here with you.
And that idea of really letting all those parts, even the parts we have judgments about, right? So the part that's going to be the timekeeper, like, are you done? You have other things to do. Are you actually doing art? You have groceries to buy. You have, you know, whatever
the list.
Or the parts that's going to judge your art and say like, oh, you think that's good. Like that actually doesn't even like look like it's lined up or whatever it is. But the idea of like allowing all of those parts a place at the table.
Yeah.
Kind of with the least bit of judgment you can. Just acceptance that those parts are there. They all have positive intentions. Like they're all trying to help you.
Yeah.
Some of them it looks really backwards and really sabotaging.
Yeah,
but.
Exactly. And some of those voices, I think oftentimes when, you know, people are exploring those voices, we've had them since we were children.
Yeah.
And like you said, giving them a place at the table, that's exactly what it is. Okay, I'm not telling you you're wrong or you're bad or I'm not wanting to get rid of you. I know it might feel frustrating for you when you go to create something. Someone, you know, a voice inside of yourself is kind of battling with you. Inviting them to witness, okay, you might not be comfortable with this, but would you like to watch and just see what happens?
Right.
And then when we're finished, you can step back in and tell me all about it. And that's actually also stretching the kind of inner critic is one way to think of it. We are making friends with those places inside of us that are resistant to new things.
And that we often have stories about, or stories we're telling ourselves about those parts and places within.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So the work you do one-on-one, tell us a little bit about the difference between life coaching and therapy, or, you know, and who might come see you. And
So, you know, I, interestingly enough, life coaching is sort of, you know, creativity and mindfulness coaching is the easiest way to describe sort of my work in the world.
Yeah.
But I have some resistance to the word life coach in that it feels a little funny to me. And while I'm not a trained therapist, most of the modalities that I study now, at least for the last year or two, have been in the realm of mindfulness, you know, therapy practices and training. Mostly I work with women. I also work with teenagers, too. My work primarily had been in Seattle prior to moving here, so I work with a lot of people online and through Zoom. But I'm just landing here in Astoria, so working with people one-on-one is, you know, a preference. It's a lot of it's more experiential. It's kind of a journey that we go on together, and we throw the idea of agenda out the window. I work with some people over a period of a few months, some people over a year, and some people I see once or twice every year. So it really depends on the person, where they're at, what they're going through. Some people need more support. If it's a big transition or loss, I do work with a lot of people experiencing grief or looking for support integrating their experiences. Part of it, I rely on my own wisdom and experience of life that has happened for me as well. So I work with also couples.
And what it may look, what does it look like when someone comes in to see you? I'm assuming there's some like background talk and getting to know.
Initially, it's getting to know one another, getting a feel for why you're interested in working together. Also, if we're a good fit. And if we're not, I have lots of resources and people that I can refer people to. I would definitely say if it seems a little bit scary to work with mindfulness or creativity, that doesn't rule you out. In fact, that's really exciting because I know that it can be for everybody. So getting to know each other, and then it's a process of kind of finding out, creating a map together. Where do you want to go? There's lots of different ways we can get there. So then that's where I'm using the tools. The tools might be experiential art projects, mindfulness practices that we do together, and then that you also do in your own time. But it also can look like guided breathwork journeys, if people aren't familiar with that. Using the breath for people that have a really hard time accessing mindfulness, or anxiety is something that they experience. Breathwork, if you've ever heard of Wim Hof, so just a really easy way to describe it, that regulates the nervous system. And so those are other skills and tools that we use as well.
And it's funny, sometimes you know, when you think about someone who's in acute anxiety, even breathing is so difficult. And telling someone to just take a couple conscious breaths is so difficult.
I find for a lot of people, and there's really no judgment about this at all, but the body doesn't feel like a safe place to be for them.
Yes, that makes sense.
Because being in the present moment and being with what's arising means being with what's there. And the breath is the easiest way to access that. So there is a lot, there is breath work, varying degrees of breath work that we utilize and use in our work together for sure. And having someone be there with you, I'm never having you do something by yourself. I'm always engaging with you. So you feel like you've got a buddy in it. And we get to throw the perfectionist hat in a box, because it's not about doing it right. It's really just about trying and doing it.
I was internally laughing when we were talking about, you know, art as accessing sort of that different part of the brain, the more intuitive. And I remember the first time I was with a friend who had me do a vision board, and she would do like these guided kind of art journeys or whatever. I am so type A, as you probably know, because you sit next to me in the pottery studio. But she was like, okay, you're not allowed to use scissors. So I had to rip things. Mm-hmm. And you're not allowed, once you put it on the page, it goes there. Like, mm-hmm. you're not changing where mm-hmm. this goes on the canvas. And I just, it was painful. It was like this very yeah. painful. But she was aware that in order to kind of, like, remove the obstacles to the flow, yeah. for me, it has to be, yeah. you know, we're going to gently ask this perfectionist part to just sit over there and read a book.
Yeah, that's the editing part. Yeah, yeah, that's the self-editing part. And I, what you said, you described about, you know, ripping images out.
Oh, it killed me too. Yeah. I was like, but I want clean edges.
Yeah, totally. Well, one of the projects I do is actually based on soul collage. So people can create a personalized deck that ties into their intuition, but also archetypes, and it's personal for them. So that is one kind of map that we use. And part of the structure of that is there is guided visualization before you start this work, but if you know what the image looks like as you're going to grab these magazine images, that's not it.
Right.
So we're constantly bringing ourselves, we're learning the language of the unconscious. Mm-hmm. We're learning the language of sort of the creative body, which very much speaks in metaphor and through imagery and not necessarily like a linear checklist.
And it sounds like, I can't remember what ancient physician said this, but someone, it was probably Hippocrates, but someone, you know, was talking about the goal of healing, or the goal of a healer, is just to remove the obstacles to cure. And for you, when you were saying you've never met anyone that doesn't have creativity, it's like, sounds like some of the life work you do is just removing that dam that's blocking the flow yeah. that's already there.
Yeah. And that's what's so important is mm-hmm. that for me, it's really about instilling empowerment mm-hmm. into the other person and scaffolding the other person, because self-doubt is such a big barrier, regardless of what people are working through,
right.
is helping people remember that it's all inside of them.
Right.
And really being a reflector for that.
And that it already exists.
It
it's
already
not a place
exists.
They need to get to.
They don't need more tools mm-hmm. to get there. Mm-hmm. They don't have to do anything right, and they didn't do anything wrong to lose contact with it. It's
right.
just my really shifting perspective, and the creative tools and mindfulness tools are a way to get there. There's
yeah.
so many different roads.
And ironically, it's often about letting go and doing less than
yeah.
having to do more or
yeah.
striving harder.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, just a different way of being.
So if people want to find out more about your work or schedule consults or mm-hmm. just the next step, is your website the best?
It's the best
spot?
Way. Yeah.
You give everyone
way.
The.
Yeah. So it's www.life-as-art.com. Sort of the catchphrase is life as art. And I totally believe that through and
yes.
through that word.
Life-as-art.com.
Yep.
Love
That's
it.
Correct. Yeah.
So we've been talking with Sarah Snedeker about mindfulness and about creativity. Any parting ideas, words of wisdom, little gems you want to leave with?
Yeah. Actually, Allie, you touched on it when we first met, and it was that quote that everything you want is just on the other side of fear.
I love yeah. that quote.
Yeah.
Who said it? Do you know who said that?
You know, I'm so embarrassed. It's lost
my mind. I don't know who said it
right
either.
Now.
It's on
yeah.
my phone.
But I love it. And
yeah.
it's so true.
Yeah. yeah. Everything yeah. you've been waiting for is just on the other side of fear.
Yeah.
So if we can just baby stepwise
yeah.
reach a little bit.
Yeah.
yeah.
Just little chunks, one at a time.
Totally.
Until we're there and we look back and we're like, wow, I did that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I look forward to many more conversations,
yeah.
hopefully on the show too.
Yeah, thank you, Allie. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Light on Health with my guest, Sarah Snedeker. Very special thank you to our generous engineer, Dylan. It is my hope that we have enlightened and empowered you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health. Have a great rest of your day.
שנסתכל על זה ונסתכל כן פעמיים היום זורם זורם כמו אתמול כמו שלשום וזה אותו כחול גדול אותו עוף בשמיים אותו עלה של זית אל מחר נוטה ליפול אז בוא נתפור את הקרח אשליה שבגבולות שמפרידה עיניים לא לדעת לא לראות.
And you're listening to KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Trump's lawyers are back in front of the U.S. Senate to persuade the jurors not to prolong the trial with witnesses and documents and to acquit. NPR's Tamara Keith reports it's the final day of the defense's presentations.
A source familiar with the thinking of President Trump's legal team says they expect to only need about two or three more hours to make their case before the Senate. Trump's legal team argued before the Senate all day yesterday, but they had a truncated day on Saturday, too. They've taken far less time to argue than the House managers did as they were arguing for President Trump's removal.
NPR's Tamara Keith. The president is charged with abuse of power and obstruction of Congress for allegedly leveraging military aid to pressure Ukraine to announce investigations into the Democrats and former Vice President Joe Biden, a Democratic presidential candidate. It remains to be seen if enough Senate Republicans will vote in favor of hearing from witnesses.